It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
I mean, that's technically true. I'm Jason Rance filling in for Dory. This is technically my selection of the stories for the Fastest 15 as Dory is off today. And I'm here from our sister station, AM 770 KTTH, where I host a weekday afternoon show from 3 to 6. I've even brought my producer along with me. This is Peyton. Hello.
Hi, that's me.
You helped me pick some of these stories.
Of course I do. I'm your producer. That's what I do.
Did Dory sneak some of these stories in to try to get me to talk about?
No, these are your stories.
Okay.
Just for you.
I mean, you were pushy on some of them.
Well, that's what I do. I'm a pushy guy.
That's true. So Governor Jay Inslee decided to extend the state's eviction moratorium through the end of the year, saying you should not be evicted if you're out of work due to COVID. That's a position that I think is rightly sympathetic. I agree with that perspective, in that through no fault of your own, through, frankly, the fault of mandates coming from Governor Jay Inslee, you maybe are out of a job or you've had your hours cut significantly, and as a result of that, you're not able to pay your rent. I am sympathetic to that. However, the policy, this moratorium, is poorly written, and too few folks are talking about that. Because what it ends up doing is creating even more problems that he doesn't appear, Governor Jay Inslee, all that interested in tackling. Because I don't even think he talks about it. Now, of course, some people are excited, but to a point. Isaac Organista, for example, he's with the Washington Community Action Network. He tells King 5, look, I'm happy about the extension, but we do have to understand that this isn't permanent.
The extension is providing relief for families across the state, but it's only temporary. Again, it's also just depending on how, no one knows how long this pandemic is going to take place. I'm hopeful that, again, as more money comes in from the federal government for rental assistance, electeds, again, are going to be hearing their constituents and city councils to make sure that there can be these protections put in place.
Now, I don't know how many constituents are actually going to step forward who have personally experienced this, because the data seems to suggest, at least nationwide, that the number of people who legitimately cannot afford to pay their rent and have not been able to come to some kind of an agreement with their landlord is relatively low. Now, obviously, the longer the pandemic is happening and the mandates are in place, the likelihood is that it's going to rise, the number of people who can't afford to pay their rent. And we do have to come up with a solid plan for this. But this is a moratorium that's been in place since March. And the problem is you don't have to proactively prove that you can't afford the rent because of the coronavirus. And we've already seen people take advantage of it. Councilwoman Renata Rollins, for example, we had this story a few months ago. She's based out of Olympia. She's pretty far to the left. And she told her landlord in a letter that she posted openly, I think it was on Medium, because everyone needed to read her open letter to her landlord, saying, yeah, I'm not going to pay rent. Although at the time, she told King 5, I can technically afford to pay rent.
It's a question of if I have money in the bank or if I could find money from family. I have the money in the bank.
Okay, so you have the money in the bank, plus you have a support system that allows you to actually pay your rent. But she chose not to pay her rent because she wanted to make a political statement. Not because she was struggling, as the moratorium was supposed to be there for the struggling renters. She wanted to make a political statement, and she got so mad that the landlord got mad at her.
I think maybe it was taken a little personally, made a little bit personal. Mm. I don't have a particular anything I'm trying to get out of my landlord.
But the free property that you're living in? I mean, that you're getting from the landlord, who, of course, would take it personally because you don't own the property. You're now just taking it from him. And you see, when we talk about the whole quote-unquote free housing in a situation like this, it's not free. And that's the problem that Governor Inslee doesn't really talk about. Because a property owner has to pay a mortgage, has to pay utility bills, has to pay the people that he or she are hiring to fix the doors that are not working, to get a plumber to come in and fix the faucet or your shower that's not working the way it's supposed to cut the grass. Those people have to get paid. Where do you think that pay comes from? It comes from some of the revenue that's coming in from the rent. And unfortunately, we live in a state and increasingly in a country that there are a lot of politicians who think all property owners and landlords, they're all evil and greedy. I mean, listen to the way Shama Sawant talks about landlords, pretending that they represent all these huge corporations and they got millions and millions and millions in the bank. They're just being greedy and they want you to be kicked out of your home. No, that's just not true. That's not true at all. A lot of these people, a lot of these landlords and property owners, they're small business owners. We're talking about mom and pop setups, essentially, where they even live on the premises. And they're struggling in a COVID economy just like other people. And it seems just patently unfair to pretend otherwise. If you came up with a system to offer, say, interest-free loans from the state of Washington to the tenants, and instead of actually going to the tenants, it goes directly to the landlord, the ones who have a legitimate need, that makes sense to me. That makes total sense to me. Because again, it's not like we're going to get hit that hard from a budgetary perspective, because the number so far is still relatively low as a percentage of the people who can, in fact, afford to pay their rent. But simply just saying, oh yeah, you just don't have to pay rent and you don't have to prove the need to get that kind of help, that just seems needlessly cruel to the landlords. And I don't understand why no one wants to step up as a politician outside of some folks on the right who have been doing it, a little bit harder to do it when there's not a legislative session in the works, in play. It just seems needlessly cruel. So maybe we should do something about that. Meanwhile, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin says it is racist for members of the media to criticize an ex-pimp and an ally of hers that she just gifted a six-figure city contract to. Andre Taylor, I'm sure Dory Monson talked about this guy just last week. He is an outspoken community activist. He is a guy who is very, very, very critical of police. He earned the trust of Jenny Durkin because he gave her political cover during the time of CHOP or CHAZ, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. He went down there. He tried to broker a deal to get the activists out, claiming that he could get them some funds from the city. And now, of course, that was a total failure. But instead of saying, yeah, nice try, you're not able to get the job done, they were all like, Jenny Durkin's like, thank you so much for giving me some street cred, because at the time it felt like none of the activists were backing me. Here's a $150,000 contract to be what he calls a street czar, which is meant to connect with criminals who otherwise might not talk to the police or the city. We don't know how the city measures success. We don't know how he's spending the $150,000. Apparently, they're supposed to tell every single month the department that hired him, in this case is the neighborhoods department, how they're spending the money. They refused to tell me how he's spending the money. They said, you should put in a public disclosure request. I mean, you could also just show me the PDF, because it's basically in the form of like an invoice. You could also send that to me, but they're not responding. So it happened, of course, at a time where the city's getting ready to lay off 70 police officers, that we learned that they hired an ex-pimp. So obviously there's some controversy there. There's some problematic optics, and people called it out. This was a story that garnered media criticism all across the country. I am very bad, and this is on me, at publicly promoting the things I do, because I'm not focused on my brand. I'm pretty humble. But I go on Fox News all the time.
Fox News?
Fox News.
Like on cable TV?
Yeah, on the TV.
Wow.
And specifically the Tucker Carlson Show, which is the most watched cable news show in the history of television.
You should probably start telling people that
really
you do that.
I really should. It's just add that to the list of things I need to remind people of, like I have a show from 3 to 6 on KTTH. I went on to talk about this. The Daily Mail talked about it. New York Post talked about it. And we were all critical of the optics. Now, Brandi Cruz, our friend from Q13, covered some of the media controversy, and she asked Mayor Jenny Durkan about her thoughts with some outlets, like the New York Post, for example, that decided to amplify the past of Andre Taylor as an ex-pimp to criticize him. And she had some interesting words.
I actually think they're racist.
Oh.
I think that we are a country that believes in redemption, and that if people come out of a criminal past, they have a right to remake themselves. And
I'll let her finish in a second. I've not found any media criticism that mentions his race or even hints at it. In fact, one could argue that when we talk about an ex-pimp, you're presuming all pimps are black, and that is, in fact, racist. But I actually don't think that's what she intended to do. What I think she's trying to do here is to get people to stop calling out this questionable hire and put attention on it, because, number one, she knows it's a bad look. Whether or not it ends up being a good hire, she knows at least it's a bad look. And how do you stop people from criticizing something? You say by criticizing that you're a racist or you're a sexist or you're a homophobe or whatever it happens to be. That is a cheap strategy to try to get people to not cover something, because no one wants to be called any of those names. No one wants to be labeled that. No one wants to be called out in such a despicable way. And so they think to themselves, oh, okay, fine. If I mention this again, she's going to call me racist again. It is a pretty transparently shady strategy to get people to shut up. Because I do think that when you hire a former pimp who not only served jail time, but was also tied, according to the Daily Mail, to a 16-year-old runaway whom was recruited, according to them, there's going to be some reasonable questions and criticisms. I think that's normal. When you claim to be a feminist, as Mayor Jenny Durkan does, who cares deeply about protecting women, something I believe that she does, and a principle that she holds, shouldn't you also be expected to be called out for hiring an ex-pimp who clearly, certainly at the time of his pimpdom, was not treating women with respect? In fact, exploiting them? I think that is a reasonable criticism. Oh, but there's more.
To do something positive in the community. And I think they're just very hyperbolic. And again, it's a reflection of these partisan times where you're either good or you're bad. You can't be someone who can be working for positive change and disagree with you.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that it was Mayor Jenny Durkan who tells us this about partisan times, because I seem to remember, again, during the days of CHOP, when President Donald Trump wanted to send some federal officials over to Seattle to help quell the sustained violence, violence that led to two murders of black teenagers. Jenny Durkan goes on MSNBC and CNN to call out Donald Trump and this administration, claiming that it was a trial run for martial law. Kind of seems needlessly partisan. It kind of seems like you don't practice what you preach. Kind of like being a feminist who hires a former pimp. Now, I got the story up on my blog over at mynorthwest.com if you want to help me amplify this, because it is pretty shady that that's the strategy. So if you go to mynorthwest.com, you can find my blog and not just read the story, but post it on your Facebook wall and your Twitter feed. Finally, there are some pot shops that are going to be coming to the city of Everett, and some people might be concerned. The Everett City Council is going to nearly double the amount of pot shops that they're going to allow to happen in sort of city limits for 400 million reasons.
400 million.
They literally have 400 million reasons why they're going from 5 pot shops to 8 pot shops in Everett.
I don't think we have enough time over the rest of the show for you to name those 400,000 reasons.
Million.
400 million reasons, yeah. Excuse me. But I would love for you to give it a shot.
Okay. Tax revenue from pot shops last year was about $400 million.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Every one of those dollars is the reason why they're looking to do this. Because if you can get $400 million from 5 pot shops, from 8, and I am very good at math, that's something like $37 trillion in taxes just from pot taxes. So that's really, really good. And right now, Cairo 7 TV noted, at least in Everett, catching up with a dude named Marco, there is apparently a great desire to go ahead and patronize these particular establishments.
Man, the pandemic, you know, everybody's stressed out, you know,
so
there's not much to do, you know, so why not sit home and medicate?
Okay, yeah, I mean, he definitely sounded stressed out there, didn't he? Oh my gosh, I cannot believe the amount of stress he is clearly under right now. He must medicate himself immediately. We talked about this on my show. Stop doing the whole I'm medicating with weed thing. You know, you're getting high. You know, there is not the stigma attached to weed that there once was. You don't need to lie and say medicate. Certainly there are some people who do, in fact, medicate. I don't know if Marco's one of them.
Sounds so much more elegant, though, when you say I'm medicated.
I mean, does it?
Doesn't sound like, you know, you're just smoking weed every single day and just getting high for no reason. It sounds like there's purpose behind it.
Actually, it kind of sounded like that dude just gets high every single day for no real reason out of just sheer boredom. Josh Estes is a business strategist for marijuana retailers. He says, hey, you know what? A whole bunch of different people are actually coming in. So stop shaming folks.
Whether it be a blue-collar worker, somebody that works in a professional setting, these locations get... They see everyone.
Okay. I mean, they don't see everyone. We don't have to go to that length to try to legitimize something that I think, at least in Washington State, is already legitimized. Doctors go. Lawyers come in. The nuns come in. Like, no, they don't. I'm guessing the nuns aren't coming in. We don't have to say everybody's going in.
Hey,
I'm not
going
to judge
them. You haven't been there. You wouldn't know.
I haven't been. That's fair. Generally speaking, when things like this happen, folks get alarmed because they think that kids are going to have access to weed. And I imagine there are some folks in the Everett community who believe that kids are now going to be at a higher likelihood of getting stoned. And that's just not true because, number one, kids probably, the ones who are getting high right now, they've already got access to weed. And this should be a reminder to actually have conversations with your kids about the dangers of getting high needlessly. And then number two, you do have to show ID before you get in. So it's not like all of a sudden they're going to go ahead and just let a whole bunch of kids in. I think this is a good idea. I think it's going to be good for the city of Everett at a time where, frankly, some significant concerns about the economy are not going away.
This has been the fastest 15 minutes in the news. Fast Dory's fastest 15.
I am Jason Rantz filling in for Dory Monson. When we come back, guess what? Kids are starting to go back to school. Is that the end of the world as we know it and we just happen to feel fine? Maybe. We'll get into it when we come back right here on Cairo Radio. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I am Jason Rantz filling in. I'm normally heard weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on AM 770 KTTH. Q13 has a new report out that is showing a lot of families are actually skipping out on sending their kids to kindergarten, and they're doing it for the obvious reason of COVID. Except when we say not sending them, it really in this case means not doing it online. You've got mothers like Leslie, who wanted to send her 5-year-old kid to Lawton Elementary School in Seattle this fall for a pretty significant and understandable reason.
The social emotional learning portion is super important for her developmentally.
That's mostly why you're sending kids to kindergarten and even preschool, right? We're talking about getting kids understanding what it means to socialize, picking up on interpersonal skills, even though they might not think that they're learning anything and it's just a bunch of kids who are hanging out and playing with blocks. Do kids still play? I don't know what kids play with anymore. Adult Barbies? Is that still a thing or has that been canceled? Whatever it is, they play.
Do you think I hang around 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds all day?
I'm not going to answer that question because there's no good way to answer that. I'm just saying, sending them there and they're just playing with each other, taking a nap in the middle of the day, doesn't actually seem to register with a lot of people, but that is incredibly important at that age. Unfortunately, because of COVID, they're not doing any of that, but they are still doing the online courses. And you and I have previously had conversations like, What does that even look like for a kindergartner or a preschooler? How are you doing it online? This mom tells Q13 it was not a good experience.
They did a fantastic job, super engaging. They couldn't hold her attention for over an hour at a time. So she would watch preschool for an hour and then she'd go and play.
In fairness, that's how I am on any TV show or movie. You get me for about an hour if it's good and then I'm out. So really, these kids are like a 38-year-old. Who watches Netflix on occasion.
Or you're like a six-year-old.
Or I'm like a six-year-old.
Probably that one.
Well, I like to think that the kids are more mature than I am immature.
No, that's factual.
But this is obviously a concern if you're hoping to get your kid up to speed with what they're supposed to be learning at that age. And so, you know, this is a mom like so many others who doesn't really know what the future is going to be like for kindergartners.
It's kind of surprising that I guess a lot of people made that decision maybe last minute like we did. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year.
So, you know, I imagine on top of it all, and again, we're talking depending on the circumstances where you are and the type of school that you're trying to get into, it's also not worth the money that you might have to pay. Or, and by the way, money, not just tuition, money as in if you actually have a job where you have to be out of the house and you have no other alternative, you're going to have to pay someone to be there to look after your kid. And on top of that, you've got the kindergarten. If you're in like a private school and you're trying to, it just doesn't make sense. And it's probably also not worth the energy of having to deal with the kid who is not really paying attention to the screen. So Leslie is doing what a lot of other kids or a lot of other parents are doing, which is just kind of hanging out with their kids alone, even though things are kind of tough right now.
It's been a challenge, but it's working for us right now. We have absolutely no idea what we're going to do in January when he has to go back to work.
I mean, I imagine lots of crying and just hysterical interviews that are follow-ups with Q13. And I feel for where these parents are. They've got to figure out what they're going to do with their kid. And the longer that the schools stay closed for in-person learning, while the economy is starting to reopen, you're putting these parents in really difficult positions of trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. And of course, it can become incredibly costly because of the child care situation. But the good news is across the state of Washington, really around the country, schools are, in fact, starting to reopen. In Everett, for example, you've got Archbishop Murphy High School, private, but they are reopening. They're doing it slowly. They're breaking grades into smaller groups and having them come in and out under this hybrid model. According to their principal talking with the Everett Herald, they're saying it went really, really well. We're following all the guidelines. And of course, we want to make sure that we keep an outbreak from happening. But it's happening even in counties like Benton and Franklin, where they're going through an incline and not a decline in positive coronavirus cases, but they're allowing the students to go back to in-person learning because parents and a lot of other activists in the community have said, you know what, this is absurd that we're keeping it closed for kids who are the least likely to have a negative effect of the coronavirus. Let's actually push our local leaders to responsibly, safely reopen our schools. And they're seeing a significant win there because the schools are reopening. And this transcends the issue of COVID safety, especially for kids, right? Kids are more likely to suffer significant health effects associated with not going to school, being isolated this entire time, than actually going and getting the coronavirus. No one wants a kid to get the coronavirus, but the data is very clearly on the side of people under the age of 19, unless there's some underlying health condition. But we know about young people and keeping them isolated, you see increased risk of anxiety, depression, and suicidal thoughts. And so you have to weigh the risks of sending kids to school and potentially being exposed to the coronavirus and what it actually means for their mental and emotional well-being of keeping them isolated. Now, I understand, because we get some of the arguments from folks on the other side of this issue saying, look, this is outrageous because even though my 10-year-old won't really suffer significantly if he or she gets the coronavirus, I've got a grandparent who lives in the home and a kid can be a spreader of the coronavirus. And I think that is totally a fair response. So for you and your individual situation, you continue to go online for the learning. Because obviously, unless we're talking about a very, very small school, your school will likely have either a parent who doesn't want to send the kid because they're just scared, or because the kid maybe has an underlying health condition, or because you either live with someone who is in a demographic that's at an increased risk of death, or you hang out with that person a lot and you're concerned. Okay, put those students in online learning. You can still accommodate while also saying to everybody else, we're going to allow you to come in. Because even on top of all of that, if that hasn't convinced you, it's also an economic argument. Shelley Burt, for example, she is a parent in the Richland School District, and she spoke to the Tri-City Herald. They're like, we need this open for financial reasons.
There's kids out there that need to be in school, and they don't have a voice. My child is 5 years old going into kindergarten, Richland School District, and he has special needs, and he has regressed significantly. And I know there's so many more kids out there like him that don't have a voice.
And she needs to get to work, she says, later on. And it's hard to do that. Lost, by the way, in all of this, and I'm so glad that we chose that cut, about students who are special needs, who in a lot of schools right now, based on the feedback that I've been getting from listeners on my show, feel like they're completely forgotten, that they're not paying attention to those special needs and the issues that they need addressed that are not being addressed because of the reliance on online learning. We spoke to a mother of a special needs student just last week out of Tacoma, and her story is heartbreaking. You can get that story, listen to it on the podcast for The Jason Rantz Show, which is available at MyNorthwest.com. I'm Jason Rantz. I'm filling in for Dory Monson. When we come back, yet another situation of the growing homelessness problem in the city of Seattle. We're going to get to that and so much more when we come back on Cairo Radio. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I am Jason Rantz filling in. Thank you guys so much for tuning in while I hold down. Is it hold down the fort? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's still
that
the term.
Okay.
That's the term.
So another dangerous and noxious homeless encampment in the city of Seattle, this time over at Jackson Park Trail in Northgate, where the homeless have built a what's being described as a metal shop. My Cairo 7 TV, they say the structure is built of wood and tarps, and it's secured by a locked door. And according to the people who actually live in the area, the homeless folks are working at this metal shop constantly. They're pushing out smoke, and there's a lot of loud, grinding, pounding noises overnight. Ed is a neighbor of this park and told Cairo 7 TV.
At nighttime is when they all come in. Okay. And that's when the grinding wheel starts, the metal shop starts, and all this other motorcycles are running up and down the trail.
So he's in a position where obviously he's annoyed, as any of us would be, regardless of whether or not it was a homeless encampment or a business that decided to work throughout the night. And unfortunately, they have also got a generator that produces a ton of smoke.
I have never in my life smelled fumes as deadly and poisonous and large in volume as what's coming out of this generator. It's engulfing all of the B building.
Just, you didn't die. We don't have to call it deadly. But, I mean, obviously, it's noxious. Derek, who lives in a complex looking over the trail, confirmed all of this.
Last night, I was awakened to some hammering noises in that metal shop.
And now he's understandably concerned about his safety.
But it was very concerning to hear what I thought was gunshot sounds. And this has happened on many occasions.
We're getting stories like this every single day. All across the region, but of course, it's most pronounced in the city of Seattle. And I usually hear from folks out there who listen to me or listen to the podcast or follow me on Twitter. They'll say, what can be done. It feels like, insert the city, isn't listening to me. And of course, in this case, Ed makes that same exact point.
I said, you won't do anything about it. You tell them there's a nursery over there with kids, you know, nurse preschool kids being exposed to this smoke, and they don't do a damn thing.
They don't do a thing. And of course, I've taken the same position for a while now, which is you need to get used to it. Because what happened in the city of Seattle recently? They get rid of the navigation team. The navigation team is the specialized group of officers who go from encampment to encampment, yes, cleaning it up and quote-unquote sweeping it, but also connecting people who are living there with resources. Now, apparently that is inhumane in the city of Seattle, at least according to this council. Seattle City Council thinks it's inhumane to connect people who are living out on the streets with shelter and then actually having some consequences if they choose not to take us up. And so the city just got rid of the navigation team. And now we're trying to figure out if anything's going to actually replace that. But certainly we know, at least with this council, is that probably not going to see any more sweeps, which means homeless encampments grow. And I can already hear it in the back of my mind. And I'm sure if I look at the text line, I'm going to see this. Someone inevitably says, thank God I don't live in Seattle anymore. I live in Everett. I live in Edmonds. I live in Squim. I got out of there. But producer Peyton, what do I say literally all the time?
That you never get any respect.
Yes, okay, I do say that. But what else do I say all the time?
That you're God's gift to broadcasting?
Again, yes, but in relationship to the issue of Seattle policies.
Oh, bad policies of Seattle spread.
Bad policies of Seattle spread. They never stay in Seattle. And we've seen it over and over and over again some more. It extends into all of these other cities because politicians see what happened in Seattle and they say, hey, I could get away with that too. Because these are policies that are driven by politics, by ideology. And folks on the right do it. Folks on the left do it. When you are an ideologue, no matter the ideology, you have blinders on. And they decided over at the Seattle City Council that it is inhumane to sweep up these encampments. And no matter the results, which to anyone who lives or visits Seattle is very clear, no matter the results, they're not paying attention to them, or they can justify what's going on. Because their marriage is to ideology, not to results. Now, we've seen how policies that actually have a carrot and stick approach can work on homelessness. All you have to do is look at what's going on in the city of Marysville. I think they do a really, really good job. Monroe as well. Parts of Tacoma do this too. Of saying, hey, we're going to arrest you if you don't actually follow the law or take us up on our offer to help you get off the streets. In Seattle, they just say, please, can you please get off the streets? No, okay. So sorry to bug you. That's the policy. And we shouldn't be shocked that it doesn't work. Well, you should be aware that it could come to your neighborhood if you're not more active in the political scene, connecting with your council members and your mayor, letting them know what your expectations are. You're listening to The Dory Monson Show. I'm Jason Rantz filling in. When we come back, Governor Jay Inslee has a way to actually, finally defeat climate change. We're going to get into it.